It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And we're back. For us, very quick. For very you, quick. It's interesting though. William talked to me about Black Panther off the air. Interesting stuff he had to say. Too many women
Come on,
came up.
Stop it.
And then something about reverse racism.
Why are you doing that?
Because I forgot to do it earlier. I actually came up with that this afternoon. I was like, wait, you said something about reverse racism? I love reverse racism. It's hilarious. Every once in a while, like, this is a thing. And there's a lot of change going on in the world. And a lot of change going on in this country. And I understand that. And I understand it's weird and it freaks people out. And times where people say, you shouldn't be ashamed to be white. You shouldn't be ashamed to be a man. Stop blaming everything on white people. Stop blaming everything on men. And I pause, and I'm like, it does seem extreme. Like, we really have gotten to a point where we're really hammering white men, ruining everything. And I stop, and I'm like, maybe I am, you know, taking. Maybe I should feel better about it. And I stop, and I'm like, no. White men are pretty shitty. Like, and don't get me wrong, it's self-perpetuated. A lot of white men didn't know that was what was happening and weren't, you know, consciously trying to be shitty. Mm-hmm. But white men have been pretty shitty, like, for all of the times. And to the degree that I think I've said this before, if we have to shift it to where white men are the oppressed ones, I feel like that's fair for a while. I mean, ideally, we can find a nice equality place. But if we don't have those that fine of control, and we have to do it where...
The pendulum swings.
Exactly. Yeah. And if it swings far enough back that white men are now being oppressed, which is not happening currently, fuckers, that is full stop. That's not happening.
But if
we get to where it does,
yeah.
I'm okay with that for now. I mean, it'll suck for me because I'm a white guy, but... I'm like, it seems fair.
It'll be hard to complain about it.
It seems fair.
Hard for me to complain. It's easy for a lot of other people, apparently. But
Ruth Bader Ginsburg with the whole how many women you want on the Supreme Court. She's like, 9, but that doesn't seem fair. It's like, well, nobody said it for the 200 years before we had a woman there.
Exactly.
So, fuck off.
That's exactly right. I mean, I hear that all the... I mean, a lot of the stories that I'm writing are very heavy with women, you know, and...
Weird phrase.
I'm just the cast is.
I absolutely know what you mean. The word choice was just
okay. Anyway,
made me giggle on the
people
inside.
Might look at it and say, "Why aren't there any men in this?" Well, nobody asked that for 100 years when you hardly ever saw. You either didn't see a woman or you saw the same of one of three women. So why is it a big deal?
To the point where I force myself. I mean, because I like edit. I love female characters, and I put female characters and stuff, and I try and put a lot of female characters. And I, in particular, try and make sure that there's always at least a majority female characters. But I'm pushing myself further now. Ran a game just this week where I had characters in my head, and in my head it was a man. And I liked it that way. I liked it better than if it was a woman, but I was like, you know what? No. We're going to make this character a woman... Just for representation amongst my four friends. I was like, because I want to break my own habit. Because a lot of it is, I picture it as a man, because in this case it was like an archetypical character that has always been male.
Sure.
And I'm like, well, then let's not do that.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, it doesn't feel this, like I didn't like the character as much when I switched it to female, but I'm like, too bad.
Go with that. What always gets me about people who criticize this is, you shouldn't be thinking like that. You just use what's best for the story or whatever.
Except we can't do that at this point.
Well, not just that, but whoever's saying that clearly has never told a story in their whole life.
Yep.
Because if they have, they know that the gender of that person does not matter. It does not change.
Unless gender is a focus in that story.
Sure, exactly. But for most of the time, it doesn't change what the conflict is. It doesn't change
Answer we never come back to. If they're like, you shouldn't think that way, you should just do for what's better with the story. Then you'd be like, okay, what's better for the story? And why?
Right.
Tell me.
But, I mean, they say you can just tell this person is completely ignorant about the artistic process because if they knew anything, they'd know that flipping the gender on that person makes no... Or changing their nationality or their skin color makes no difference.
People want to believe that they're out of it. People want to believe, yes, sexism is a thing and racism is a thing, but not with me.
Right.
I'm about pure art.
Right, pure art. That's like, not influenced by culture at all.
I'm magically, I was raised in a vacuum. But people believe that. People want to believe that, and people do believe that. And I believed that for a long time. People want to, it's the same thing. The whole, like, it's terrible misogyny at this place. Yeah, but I'm okay, right? It's the same thing.
Yeah.
It's like, there's sexism, it's awful. I mean, I'm not sexist, but lots of guys are. Like that kind of thing.
That's
really nice. I thought of a couple things that I meant to talk about last week, and I didn't do it.
Okay.
One of them is the game I ran. So, I've been running this game, this short-term game, call it the Six Goddesses campaign. It's going very well.
Oh, good.
But there's no one I'm going to talk about. It's going very well. I'm very pleased with that one. One of my players is going to be gone for this week on a business trip. And I'm like, shit. I don't know that I'm at a point where I could run the next session without their character. Mm. And I thought about it. I'm like, oh, maybe I can. And finally I was like, no. And so I was like, well, I still want to get together. Let's come up with something else. So I was like, you know what? I'll come up with a one-shot.
Sure.
I'm like, what the hell is wrong with me, though? I will come up in 1 week with a brand new game that is totally self-contained to be played in 2 to 2.5 hours.
Sure.
In a week. Well, you don't make games, so I'll tell you, that's kind of an insane idea.
Oh, okay.
It's a lot of work, okay. Or it should be a lot of work.
I mean, in the gaming I've been doing, like once a month, that's what they do, is they play these one-shot games that they're making up off.
You also have to remember, Dave of Id is a goddamn phenom.
Well,
he's
and
not
the other,
normal.
The other guys that run games there, too. There's like 3 or 4 of them, so it's pretty neat.
And often, a lot of those, like if you're doing like Fiasco and stuff like that, it's building it as a group.
Right.
That's
right.
Not what I was doing here. I'm like, I'm going to come to you with a thing.
Gotcha. Understand. In a week.
And so I pulled some stuff out of my butt.
Yeah?
I really did, just out of nowhere. Didn't work on it too much. Wrote up, I believe, including character sheets for 4 characters, all the stuff I had was 8 pages worth of stuff.
Wow.
And damned if it didn't work and work well.
Well, see, there you go.
And I'm very proud. I can't take all the credit. My players stepped up to it in a big way.
Mm.
And it was really fun, and we finished, and everybody enjoyed it, and it was, and the thing is also one of those games that there was a ton of mystery. I told everybody the day before, I'm like, make sure you bring something that can text. Because we're going to want to pass a lot of notes, and we don't sit close enough together to do that physically.
Mm.
So people were constantly having to text me things. Because the story was kind of generic in that reclusive old woman dies, super rich, and in her will, 7 people are brought to her house who seem to not know her at all, and they're going to be locked in for a night, and they have to find her money, and it'll be split amongst whoever's still alive at the end of the night. You know, there's a lot of horror movies based on that.
So 3 NPCs and...
4 NPCs it ended up being, because one, that was the other thing. One person may or may not come, and so I created a character who was not that interesting, but if they showed up, I had a bit that was going to be really interesting.
Okay.
And so this was it, and they had to work this shit out. And what it actually was that of the 7 people, 2 of them, one of whom was a PC and one of whom was an NPC, were demonic acolytes trying to gain the favor of an archdemon.
Mm.
Because the old lady who died had been an acolyte of this archdemon and had been killing people off to keep herself going and keep herself alive long past normal age and rich and everything like that. But the demon had decided it wasn't worth the trouble anymore and let her die and had brought these two acolytes in, and whoever could sacrifice somebody to her would get all the stuff. But in addition to having a player who's like that and an NPC, and they didn't know the NPC was like that either, but one of the NPCs, there was also somebody who was there who was actually the dead woman in a new body. Because she had figured out that, well, the demon had basically canceled their bargain. She went and found another demon. And so when she died, she had a little power from the other demon and managed to get into a different body. And the deal was, if she could sacrifice somebody to the other demon that night, then she'd have a very similar, she'd have a new body, and she'd have a very similar deal to the old one. And that was a player. And then another player was the first archdemon in a body there, partially to make sure that somebody got sacrificed in her name, but also just sort of to have fun.
And nobody knew.
No players knew anything about it.
This, I have to say, this seems super clever to me.
Well, what it is super fucking complicated.
Well, yes, and it's, but it's very clever.
Well, and it's an idea I've been playing, and this is what I worried, because I talked with a player about this weeks ago, as this idea I've been having, which is the generic haunted house scenario, but everybody in it is secretly something major.
Well, one of the clever things...
And this is a smaller version of that.
One of the clever things about it is that the genericness of this haunted house thing sort of puts you off to thinking it's anything else. You know what I'm saying? It lowers you in.
And they had some tips, because I kept saying not safe. And the one who was playing the dead woman in another body, she's like, I have a question. My character sheet says my name is this, but then I was like... But they didn't put it together. And then the fourth one who didn't show up was just another one of the generic people, and it was a retired... She was a retired classics professor. But her backstory that was going to come out if this person showed up, but didn't otherwise, so it never happened, is that she actually is an ex-nun who, on a mission trip in Africa, saw such horrible things that she completely lost her faith. And so then she quit the church and became a very staunchly atheist college professor, and then retired and all that. And then a few weeks ago, because she's a distant relative of the dead person, an angel visited her and said, God has chosen you. There's some terrible demon shit going down here. You need to go deal with it. And gave her the hilt of a sword called the Sword of Truth that she didn't know. But when she took it out in front of the bag, it was going to be a flaming thing. And so I pretty much expected she would wipe the floor with all of them if she was there. That ended up not happening. It's funny, though, the one playing the dead woman unknowingly murdered the NPC acolyte, like, right out of the gate. Because the dead woman had the benefit of knowing the house and knowing where things were and stuff. So she took him someplace, and she took him out immediately. And she ended up winning. But what was really funny is the one playing the archdemon was in the body of a crazy homeless man, actually. So a lot of stuff he / she did seemed just crazy. But she kept using her magic to move shit around and things. So at one point, somebody actually stabbed her with a syringe full of a paralytic. And so she's just on the floor, laying there. So she uses her own magic to try and pull her out of the room. And all they see is that this body that can't move is scooting along the floor. And they don't know who's doing it. And later I'm like, all that time and the time, because there was an NPC that she... I was like, oh, that was all her. The whole time. She's just fucking with all of you. And they all had fun. And I had fun, and it was the right time. Like, we got out of there on time. I didn't have to stay up late or anything. I was just so pleased.
Yeah, that's great.
I feel like something has changed now that I'm taking over GM again. I feel like maybe I got perspective during the, like, year or so that Dan was GMing. I don't know. And maybe the players did, too, because it was a different person with a different style. But I feel like I'm approaching it differently, and I feel like they are, and it's being really cool.
Excellent.
So that was awesome.
That's good.
The other thing I want to talk about is the protest on March 24th, I think, or maybe 5th, the Saturday, whichever it is, for gun control and all that Trish and I are going to. We are not taking that bus.
Yeah.
Because is an 18-hour bus trip overnight, 8 hours there, and then an 18-hour bus trip overnight back. And I was like, I'll do it. It's worth it. I'm going to do it. But then I was like, however, well, and originally we had talked about flying instead, but it's really expensive for some reason. But I was like, we do have our own car. And we could maybe go more direct. Mm-hmm. We also could, you know, go sooner and stay and not have to do it all in one day or anything like that. And so it is now, I feel almost guilty because we're going to the protest, but it's also like a 5-day kind of fun road trip for us, including just a day in the Baltimore, D.C. area before the protest to do whatever the hell we want. Mm-hmm. And we're staying in like a nice hotel in Baltimore and stuff. But yeah, so we're going to leave on a Wednesday night, go a few hours, sleep, Thursday drive the rest of the way, and then get to Baltimore, and then Thursday night, Friday night, and Saturday night, we're staying in the same hotel in Baltimore. And so Friday we'll do whatever we want, Saturday we'll protest, and then after we protest we'll go back to the hotel, and then Sunday we'll start driving home, and we'll take Monday off too, so it should be fun.
That sounds like a good plan.
Yeah, I'm willing, if that's my option, I'm willing to do that, but is it though? Well, and the other thing is, the bus ticket wasn't cheap. Mm-hmm. And I was like, when you count for both of us, that'll buy a lot of gas and lodging. Mm-hmm. So maybe maybe we'll do that. So yeah, we're going to do that instead. So that's pretty cool. Let's talk about some shit coming up here. Next week, this week, for the rest of you, Tomb Raider comes out.
Yep.
2 weeks after that, Ready Player One comes out. I am excited for that.
Yeah, I think we might see that in the theater.
I'm a little bit nervous because I think it's been updated.
Is that bad?
Well, as you probably have seen if you've seen the trailers, there is a lot of nostalgia built into it. Mm-hmm. And it looks like it's a nostalgia grab, but it's not. It's the nature of the story. Mm-hmm. Because part of the story is the guy that essentially developed this whole virtual world was very obsessed with 80s pop culture, because that's when he grew up.
Right.
I feel like the movie has upped it. I don't think it's as much 80s now. I think they're going with, who's our demographic for this movie? What time period was it when they were kids? We'll use that level of nostalgia instead.
What makes you think that?
Just because I see things. The big one, Iron Giant's in there, and I'm like, that's not from the 80s. And there have been a couple other things that I'm like, that's a later time period. That's a different generation's childhood stuff. And so I'm a little, and I mean, I get it. It's another one of those, like, you know, you sort of need to do it to make the movie. But I'm hoping it's not too much of that. Because as near as, my best guess is that the Iron Giant is taking the place of Leopardon, which was a robot in a Japanese Spider-Man show in the 80s. And I'm like, I'm disappointed in that. But I'm still mostly really excited for it. And
I mean, I've never read the book, but
I would highly recommend waiting till you see the movie, because I've learned my lesson on that. But afterwards, I would highly recommend that book. It's a very good book. If you can, I would also highly recommend the audiobook as narrated by Will Wheaton on Audible. Very good. And part of it is because it's like a young man, young sort of like late teen, is our hero, mm-hmm. as first person. And Will Wheaton, no matter how old he gets, always sounds like a late teen. And it's also fun to hear him talk about himself, because in the book, Will Wheaton is mentioned, and so that's fun. Apparently, it was lightning in a bottle, because the guy wrote another book recently, an unrelated one. Apparently, it kind of sucks. So, but I really liked the book, so, and I'm very excited about the movie. So, that'll be cool. Atlanta just came back. Did you ever watch first season, even?
Mm-mm.
You should do that. See? You might be able to talk about Black Panther a little bit if you watch first season of Atlanta. How fucked up is that to say? How fucked up is that, people?
I don't know.
No, but you should see the first season of Atlanta. Okay. No, it's just fucked up to be like, watch this show about black people, and then you can talk about this completely unrelated movie about black people, right? That you'll have enough cachet at that point. No, but Atlanta's amazing. You should watch it. It's back, and Legion is coming back.
Oh, I
guess. Less than a month. It's like April 3rd.
Oh, wow.
I'm excited about that. Yeah, I think that's about it. Let's hat some stuff. Things and stuff. Okay. If you don't understand how this show works, go back to the last episode.
Craig wants to know.
Again, Craig is dominating this double episode.
Are Skyrim and Mass Effect massively overrated? And parenthetically is what there I would say. He says, my answer is yes.
All right. In answer to your question, fuck off and die.
We don't think so, I guess. I don't think so. But I don't know how they're rated. I mean, all I know is what we think of them. I'm not part of a community that's saying they're the greatest thing ever or anything, so I have no idea. I don't think so.
I have to take these separately. Because Skyrim's pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
But I've always felt, in general, the Bethesda games, and especially the Elder Scrolls ones for me, are a very specific type of game. In that I really like them, but I wouldn't want to just always be playing that kind of game. Like there's a vibe like that for me. Right. And that's not necessarily true for
Fallout,
other games.
Fallout's the same.
Yeah, see, Fallout I feel a little bit better on. I don't know why. It may just be that I like the genre better or something. But yeah, the Bethesda games in general, they're fun, but they are so long and stuff like that. So, I mean, I can understand. I could say maybe it's overhyped. Mass Effect is the greatest thing that has ever been invented, and fuck you. I love the Mass Effect games. I love the one I'm currently playing, probably the most. It just hits that absolute sweet spot for me of world building, exploration, RPG elements, action elements, just right. And I think the setting is phenomenal. I think the setting is wonderfully put together. I love the mythology of Mass Effect. I love the society. I love the detail. I think it's brilliant setting for anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the video game is just the right touch of that sort of action and RPG and, you know, base building and stuff like that. And narrative. There's a lot of narrative, yeah. and it's good narrative.
A lot of character development and good character acting.
And that, especially in Andromeda, like I care about all of these fucking people on my ship. Mm-hmm. It's kind of annoying. I have to every once in a while be like, you know, that's pre-programmed, right? like when they do shit that doesn't, I'm like, you're frustrating me. And I'm like, well, that's because it's a programming thing. Shut up. I just recently figured out. So I've talked before about always put different combinations of people in your team,
mm-hmm.
because when you're driving around in the car, they have unique dialogue.
Conversations.
I've discovered, I think, but I'm pretty sure on this, the dialogue in the car between any two given people has a definitive narrative arc.
Oh, like from one thing to the next, they continue a conversation and things.
Well, and that it's their relationship has a story just in the car.
Oh, okay.
And here's how I figured this out. I've been playing and I've been doing stuff, and I have the difficulty pretty low and I'm pretty high level, so like, you know, stuff's not hard.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, you know, whoever, let's take whoever. And I started thinking, who are combos I haven't done?
Because
I want to hear what they have to say. Mm-hmm. And so I tried a couple of them, and they did not get along. At all. And I was like, what are the odds that all the teams I picked were the ones that got along well?
Yeah.
But I've now realized, no, that nobody, I mean, they all had issues in the beginning, and then they resolved them. And sure enough, I was like, okay, then I'm going to keep this pair.
Mm.
And sure enough, they worked through shit,
mm-hmm.
and they got better. And I've had a couple of them like that. And I'm like, I think this is intentional. Like, when you get them in the car, whatever that is, they've got issues.
Mm.
And then over time, they work through them,
mm-hmm.
but you have to keep them in the car and do this. In particular, Vetra and Liam fucking hate each other.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, dude, one conversation ends with Vetra fucking screaming, stay out of my shit and don't talk to my sister. And their resolution
mm-hmm.
is the point where they agree that they're basically good squad mates to have and watch each other's back, but that, quote, when this is all over, we'll probably live way far away from each other. Like, that's as good as it gets for them.
Yeah, yeah.
Meanwhile, I've taken veteran PB out so much that PB is saying, psst, I got a secret. What? You're my favorite. So, like, yeah, it's just who you have. Like, they have to work through shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, somebody thought that up.
I know.
That's brilliant. and that's one of my favorite things about this one, more so than the original trilogy. I feel like they really...
No, that's true.
The relationships, not just with your character, but with each other, right. is really interesting.
Yeah, yeah. They definitely picked
up. And I mean, and something sticks out. The whole Gil Kahlo thing, like, bothered me for a while. The engineer and the pilot, the Salarian pilot.
Right, right, not getting along.
They were not getting along to a degree that I'm just like, I don't know how this gets fixed, and I'd hate this. What decision did I miss that would have had them getting along?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And eventually, and that's the other thing, more so, I think, than the other games, this makes you make hard decisions, and you have to make them then.
Mm.
There's no button that says, I'll come back to this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And eventually, I sort of had to pick sides.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of them was really mad at me.
Yeah.
And I was like, shit.
Yeah, and you had to work through that. Yep.
But then stuff happened, and we resolved it.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt like three people genuinely resolving a relationship conflict.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
they did do a really good job with that in this one, for sure.
And it's just, and they're all... interesting. Like, I keep switching. Like, I really like this one. I don't really like this one. And then later, I'm like, I hate that one. And I'm like, no, they've all got weird shit.
Yeah.
I could not stand. I mostly couldn't stand the humans to begin with.
Mm.
Cora and Liam. I'm like, fuck. And then Liam. I got really into Liam. And then I got really annoyed with him again. And I'm like, no, I think I get it. I get what kind of person he is.
Mm.
And there's problems with that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a lot of cool stuff associated with that. Mm-hmm. And Cora had a lot of issues. But then, of course, she worked through some of those issues. And I like her a lot better now.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's just fascinating.
Yeah, yeah, it really is.
And even the broader character. I fucking hate Kumail's character. I still feel bad about that. He's so fucking annoying. But the head of Colonist Affairs or whatever... We have such arguments, and I hate them, because, like, I mean, sometimes she's wrong, but there's other times that I'm like, you're not wrong, but you're wrong for having that opinion, even though it's the right opinion.
Yeah.
like, we get into it, and no, I absolutely love the Mass Effect games. But, I mean, it's a specific style. There are a lot of popular games out there I do not like,
sure.
And other ones that I'm
sure.
pretty sure I would not like.
Sure.
Mass Effect is as much is as far as I want to go in terms of squad-based tactical shooters.
Hmm.
And for some people, I say that, and they're like, oh, yeah, me too. And other people, they're like, it's not a squad-based tactical shooter. I'm like, I know that, but you have a squad.
Mm.
You can deploy them, and it's a shooter. Like, that's as far as I'm willing to take it.
Yeah.
And I really enjoy that aspect, but I'm like, if it got more involved, I think I would not.
Yeah, like, my wife, same thing. I mean, there's this, and there's, like, Call of Duty, and she doesn't want to play Call of Duty, or
yep.
anything like it.
Yep.
But this isn't like it, but it's enough like it that she has fun with it.
And yeah, it's very interesting for that. And I mean, and it's, you know, it's totally different from Assassin's Creed, which I also really love, and that game gets hyped to craziness.
Sure.
And I'm like, there are dumb things about that game, not the least of which is this giant, overarching, fascinating story that they are absolutely never going to resolve, except supposedly they're going to resolve it in comic books, but fuck off, I'm not doing that. But it's still fascinating, and it still gets me every time. Every one, they end with some new information that sort of adds to the story that's going nowhere, that's just going to perpetuate, but it's still, I'm like, oh, that's so interesting. Like, every time. And is it manipulation? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But it's manipulating me into thinking I'm having a good time. So I'm okay with that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's too tricky. There are people out there who would absolutely hate Gone Home. Mm-hmm. And I fucking love that game.
Yeah.
What Remains of Edith Finch? To me, a very similar game. I still highly recommend you guys play that.
It's on our list of things to maybe get.
It's very similar to Gone Home in certain ways, mm-hmm. and not in others, such that some people would really not like it who liked Gone Home. Mm-hmm. Other people would really love it, and some people would love it and not particularly like Gone Home. I also love that one. But, you know, I mean, there's other games that suck. I don't know. I'm usually a pretty good judge for myself. There aren't too many video games that I thought I was going to like, and I started playing, and I'm like, oh, this sucks. Doesn't happen too much. A lot of it is a mindset. Mm. There are games that I'm like, that's not the kind of game I want to play right now.
Yeah.
So that can be a thing. But yeah, mostly, Greg, get the stick out of your ass.
You know, I don't think my wife and I are very much aware of how popular a game is that we're playing.
Yeah.
And our only interest in it being popular is so if we like it, they'll make more. Otherwise, we don't really care how popular it is. I mean, there's a game we played that we hoped would be really popular because we wanted to see more, and that was, I think it was on PS3, Brutal Legend.
Oh, yeah. Great. The Jack Black.
It was so good.
I still haven't played that. I really want to play
it. It was really, really good, but
I've never heard a bad thing about it.
Not that popular, and so they aren't going to make another one, but man, yeah. We really, really liked it.
I have a game like that, too. It's called Mass Effect Andromeda.
You mean they're not going to make any more?
I don't think so. They're not making any DLC for it, even. Like, it bombed.
Oh.
So I think this is the death knell of the series, at least for quite a while.
Really?
Yeah. No, it did not do well.
I'm really surprised by that.
Well, apparently in the beginning it was just insanely glitchy, and that can be a thing.
Well, yeah, I guess.
But beyond that, I don't know. Yeah, it didn't hit people right, and it hit me perfect, so I don't know. I'm at that point, and this doesn't happen with a lot of games, because I've put, like I said, I've put over 100 hours in it. I am dragging my feet specifically because I'm just like, I don't want this to be over yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to do in this game. If there was a way to platinum while doing a single playthrough on this game, I might put forth the effort.
Oh, wow.
I like it that much. What is it? This game is so popular. Brutal Legend. I have a little bit of advice for those of you who ever play Mass Effect Andromeda. You should hear this, because this is an important thing. At a certain point in the game, there's only one place where it happens, so at that point, your car breaks down. You're looking blankly at me. Did you guys never hit that part?
I mean, it's a long game, so yeah. Lots of things happen.
There's a part where your car breaks down. When that happens, just go to the computer and look it up, because it's a quest. And it's a quest that is very unintuitive and dumb, and nothing interesting happens in it. It's just a short quest you have to deal with. And if you don't look it up, you can spend a lot of time trying to figure it out and never figure it out. And in that whole time, you're just out of a car and out of fast travel. And that sucks.
I do not remember that.
It's because it's very forgettable, unless you're stuck doing a bunch of shit for a long time.
Mm.
So just look it up. When you get there. If your car breaks down in the game, just look it up. Trust me.
Okay.
Stupid.
Maybe that didn't happen to us. I don't know.
It is a specific... You have to get really kind of far north in Illidan.
Oh, okay. Well.
And the problem is it's not instant, and so, like, I fast traveled a pretty long ways away, and then it broke down.
Oh.
And then I was stuck, and it turns out you have to be somewhere over by where it happens. And so I had to run there. I ran across a lot of sand. And it's a thing that, like, is really easy to miss because you're just out in desert.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And like I said, it's like a five-minute thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's fixed. And then the game goes on. And nothing ever comes of it. So it's really annoying if you don't know where to look. And it's hard to tell. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Greg, you're wrong. Give me that.
I'm curious to know why he thinks that. I mean,
I am too. Go to the blog, Craig, and tell us why you're right. I mean, you're wrong about being right, but tell us why you think so. Tell us why you are misinformed.
Well, I mean, by overrated, we just mean people are saying it's like A level when it's really B or C level or something. Yeah.
There are people who
doesn't get live up into, to the hype, I guess.
I will say there are people in the cult of Skyrim who I think are taking it too far. I will not say that about Mass Effect, because fuck you. That's my answer to a lot of questions these days. Fuck you. I'm not sure what that means. I know what fuck you means. Yeah. All right. Also, Craig, you can wait if you want, because you're getting married. But eventually, go to the blog and tell us. Speaking of Craig.
Another Craig.
Yes. Wow,
this might be Craig's show.
Absolutely dumb. Two shows.
Yeah, that's right.
Craig says, given Cthulhu, I just want to stop and point out, Cthulhu's not capitalized.
Oh.
If it weren't for the fact that the Elder Gods pay no mind to us human beings, I feel like you could cause some wrath by not having capitalized the proper name Cthulhu.
Yeah.
It's weird because he spelled it right, but he didn't capitalize.
Okay.
Given Cthulhu is pretty popular in geek circles, do you think we'll ever see it transition to the mainstream like superheroes have? I want to get my quick, obvious answer out of the way. Already happened, Hellboy.
Kind of.
That was Lovecraftian right there. I mean, that was absolutely Lovecraftian. And it was a very mainstream film. It's been in others, of course. This is a thinker. I think my answer is no, but I think my explanation for it is still tricky. What do you think?
Well, I mean, there have been films, you know, that attempted to...
Oh, tons of Lovecraftian films. Sure. But not a lot that you'd consider, like, a mainstream...
That's right.
Or start to become a thing where, like, everybody wants to make the newest Cthulhu film.
I think where Hollywood's at right now is, let's see if we can get this Stephen King thing to work, and then we'll worry about more esoteric or more whatever things like Lovecraft. And I don't think they're getting the Stephen King. I mean, aside from It. Dark Tower didn't work. Yeah. So I think everyone's so much in the mindset of cinematic universes right now that if anyone brings up Lovecraft, that's probably part of the conversation, is how many movies can we do? Which movies, you know, which stories are we going to tell? And nobody's probably even thinking or even willing to think of some standalone movie, and that might get in the way, especially while they're trying to boot up, like, Universal Monster Cinematic Universe and the Stephen King Cinematic Universe.
Well, so I think
that might hold it back.
For many years, there was an attempt, mostly fueled by Guillermo del Toro, but just in general, to get At the Mountains of Madness made into a film.
Yes, right.
And that eventually died. I don't know. My answer is different. I think mine is... There is one thing that I don't think will become a mainstay, like, mainstream thing in cinema that, like, are the big blockbusters that people go to. And that's being bleak. And Lovecraft is almost first and foremost incredibly bleak.
Not without there being some gimmick, like someone has to saw their foot off to get out of a chain, or there's some action in it. Because that's another aspect of this that might...
Well, yeah, and that's what takes the bleakness away. There's agency and stuff involved. You can only take agency so far in a Lovecraftian tale, because if the good guys win in the long run, it is almost by definition then not Lovecraftian.
Yeah, right. No, but also, the Lovecraft stuff is so atmospheric. I mean,
absolutely.
One of the reasons why Hellboy worked as a film, even though it was Lovecraftian, was the Lovecraftian elements...
Was just the last 20 minutes.
Exactly.
And also were the shittiest 20 minutes of that film.
Pretty much. So, you're just not going to get people to go to a movie where the whole point... You know, now somehow they have to visually... And this can be done in film, but somehow they have to visually get people just to feel dread the whole time with something that they're not even probably able to see for a good portion of it. I mean, it's...
And that most likely will not resolve in any satisfying
exactly,
way.
Exactly, exactly.
And you can make a movie like that, and people can like a movie like that. It's never going to become a mainstream trend.
Or a blockbuster.
Because it's... There's no hope. There is no hope in Lovecraft. Sort of ever.
Yeah.
The best you get is Survive to Die Another Day.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, I don't ever think that's going to be... It's not upbeat enough. I don't know.
Well,
because the closest thing I can think of in terms of the bleakness again is Coen Brothers. Coen Brothers films tend to be pretty bleak and sort of hopeless.
They're dark comedies.
That usually that is true. That is true.
Lovecraft's not a dark comedy.
No, there's nothing funny about it.
It's a dark
idiot. And it's not. Horror. There's an approachability in Coen Brothers films because they're about people, and they're very much about humanity.
Mm.
Lovecraftian stuff, again, sort of by definition, is not about humanity. And it's, in fact, about pointing out how insignificant humanity is.
Yeah, Coen Brothers, I mean, there's an element of farce in the Coen Brothers, really.
I just was seeing a thing recently where they were trying to explain the oeuvre, as it were.
Mm.
And it was basically this idea, and it, not only was it human, but American, this idea of basically the fallacy in working to pursue the generic sort of American dream.
Huh.
That, you know, you're gonna, the, you know, the get-rich-quick scheme and things like that and all this don't work. And I'm like, yeah, I see that.
Well, it also seems like...
Well, it's because somebody recently tried to do a grand unified theory of the Coen Brothers films.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Make them all set in the same universe, and so this kind of thing came up then. Which I'm still like, are you going to put True Grit in there?
Well, the characters seem to be embarking on some kind of journey... That you can imagine all of these characters, like even in Fargo, you can imagine all these characters at some point before the journey starts thinking, wow, this is going to be like that kind of movie.
Yep.
But it ends up being a very different kind of movie.
they're sort of...
Like everyone hopes it's going to be like a movie and it isn't. Well, it is. It's like a
comedy. Well, and they're essentially tragedies in a very classic sense.
Hmm.
To get really ostentatious here and quote Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead, the good end unhappily, the bad unluckily, that is what tragedy means. they start off with certain intentions. Even the bad guys, like, you know, they have plans that are pretty straightforward, and then it goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so much, to me, one of the most common things in a Coen Brothers movie is somebody who thinks they are a good person and then slowly becomes a bad person and eventually has to face the fact that they have become a bad person.
Mm-hmm.
I see that in a lot of them. But again, I feel... and this gets into a whole thing. Like, so much about film... is supposed to be like the human condition. And even the superhero movies have that. Because we've humanized our superheroes in a lot of ways and stuff like that. And again, Lovecraft is exactly the opposite.
Well, now...
The dehumanizing nature of the universe.
Right. I just wanted to point out, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Is actually...
Which is like the one I haven't seen that I really need to see.
It's a comedy in the classic sense. Totally. You start at the bottom of the wheel and you end up at the top, and there's even a marriage at the end. That's one of the things Jazz points out about comedies is
that's
a very typical thing for there to be a marriage.
High comedy, high to low tragedy.
Yeah.
But it's really funny.
And it's supposed to be based on The Odyssey. So.
Oh, I see. It's really funny, though, to see the sometimes arbitrariness of those rules. Because I remember watching Merchant of Venice the movie from a while back that has Pacino playing Shylock, and like Joseph Fiennes is one of the heroes in it and stuff like that.
Okay.
And it's a comedy, and it's a comedy because of that exact thing. Like, our protagonists start from lowly beginnings to greatness, and our villains start from immense power and are brought low. It's definitely a comedy in that sense. It's fucked up. It's also where we get the pound of flesh thing from.
That's right.
Like, that movie bothered the shit out of me. And it didn't help that we ended with, I think it's a double wedding at the end. And all, everybody's left is happy and it's wonderful. And just as, and I'm just like, you did not earn this. And it's not their fault. Shakespeare did it. Yeah, but I'm like, you did not. You traumatized the shit out of me. Nobody should be happy right now. Like, I guess maybe they should because they didn't have to see every part of it. But, like, I love that you create those rules sort of arbitrarily, and there, and I'm sure there are times where you can follow the tragedy thing and you're like, actually kind of heartwarming at the end. I like playing with that stuff. Yeah, but I just feel like Lovecraft is so outside of that, and I'm a fan, racism not included. I still periodically read, because all of his extant works exist on at hplovecraft.com, and you can just read them. And I like it, but yeah, it's a tone that I don't think will ever make it into the zeitgeist, because I don't think it could. I mean, I think if it did, nuclear winter would follow within the month.
Well, I agree. I think a film could be made. I think it could. Critics could.
Films have been, and they've been great.
Right, critics could love it, and fans could love it, but it's not going to make any kind of box office bank at all.
And the vast majority of Lovecraft related things you see are very indie. Sometimes not. Cast a Deadly Spell was a great example. Like, Cast a Deadly Spell is a great film, by the way. The late Dennis Hopper, David Warner, good cast. And it's a old noir detective story. Set in like the 40s or something like that, but it's in a slightly alternate world where magic is a thing, and it's a very neat story, and it has decided Lovecraftian elements to it. So I mean, it pops up even in like popular film and things, but overall, it's much more embraced by indie filmmakers, and I think with good reason.
Well, I would say this, too, about its popularity with certain people. There are a lot of people who know Cthulhu, like Cthulhu, have never read a Lovecraft book.
Yep.
Have maybe played a game that's based on it. Maybe read a book that has Lovecraft elements in it.
Yep.
It's become something in the geek community that's a thing everyone knows about and laughs at and gets in jokes about. But even they, a lot of them, don't really get into it.
And that is a thing. Could a mainstream trend happen to include tentacled space monsters in a lot of films? Yes. And there are a lot of, not even films, books and other media that take the mythology, but not at all the perspective. Mm-hmm. From Lovecraft. And actually, people have talked about this. There's a lot of role-playing games based around Lovecraft.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they tend to be investigative games that are hard to run as campaigns because people end up dead or insane.
Right, right.
There is an exception called Cthulhu Tech. And it is set about 300 years in the future. And basically the old gods have come to devour the earth and all of that shit. And we're fighting back with advanced, weird Cthulhu-based, alien-based technology. And so people wear, like, mech suits that turn them into monsters and stuff so they can fight the things and stuff like that. And it's still, the odds are against humanity, but we're fighting back. And a lot of us have. But, like, don't get me wrong. I think it's an interesting game, and I'd like to play it. But, like, it very much subverts the whole point of Lovecraft. Like, there's hope, and we're fighting our... But no.
Nope. No. There's something bigger than Cthulhu.
The shadow's going to come over, and it's going to eat you. Something
bigger than that thing.
And it is all very confusing, because after Lovecraft died, some people, in particular a gentleman by the name of August Derleth, could not cope with not having it be about good and evil. And so he, in some cases, altered Lovecraft, because he curated a lot of Lovecraft stuff after he died, but also wrote a lot of other stuff that expanded on the mythology and made it so all of the giant space monsters there, the good ones and the bad ones, mm-hmm. and that mm-hmm. kind of thing, and there's this mm-hmm. ongoing war. Whereas Lovecraft was like, no, there's just giant space monsters doing giant space monster shit that we can't understand and that doesn't concern us, except that they might just sit on us.
Yeah, like...
Like, we...
Someone stepping on
we
a dog.
We are the fleas on a dog.
Yeah, yeah.
And the dog's just doing dog. It's not a good dog or a bad dog. It's a dog. And that was the whole point. And he's like, no, 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 this dog's really good. This dog's really bad. Because people want that. It's about good and evil. Moral ambiguity, especially to that degree, just amoral, just straight up 100% amoral, mm-hmm. is not something we're into as a society.
I guess.
Because... Because, yeah, we can't cope with that. Humans love the duality thing.
Mm-hmm.
Can't be in the middle, can't be more than two things. Has to be two things. I don't know why that's been irking me a lot lately. I've been trying to do a lot more of
the... I don't know if that's a human thing. It's definitely our culture thing, for sure.
Yeah, 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 that's true.
Our culture's like
that. It has become the dominant culture. I don't know. Yeah, the good and evil thing... has really kicked in a lot of places. And I'm like, there's so much, even if I believe in that, which as we've specified, I don't believe in absolute good and evil.
Right.
There can be so much stuff in the middle. And just the idea, this has been bugging me lately too, that it has to be all one or the other, anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That, like, I have to be like, I believe in this, and nothing else on it. Like, well, here's an example I hate to bring up, but every once in a while, I'm not even going to say he does, Trump says something that I agree with.
Sure. That's not impossible.
Yeah.
Unlikely, and, but not impossible.
Well, and I work very hard to see it and acknowledge it.
Mm-hmm.
Be like, I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
The temptation is to just be like, I oppose any word that comes out of his mouth.
Right, right.
And it's easy to do.
Sure.
Because so much of it is that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it is very easy, as a lot of us have done, to write him off 100% and be like, it is impossible for him to do anything good in the presidency.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's a good idea. Just like I don't think the other people would be like, no, he can do no wrong. Nobody should be able to do no wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody should be able to do no right.
Yeah. Because it's just not how reality works in the end.
And I mean, it's been here. And don't get me wrong, I am so behind Time's Up, and me too. And I am so happy to see these people, these men, getting consequences for their actions and things coming to terms and being taken out of positions of power and things like that. And as I have said before, I'm totally willing to let the pendulum swing on in that direction. At this point, I am willing to let some innocent people go to jail for this kind of shit, because we've had so many guilty ones not, if it came to that. But anyway, I'm a little off topic. It does not, I mean, it depends on who it is, but like, Al Franken is not suddenly a useless human being who should be spat on and never associated with again.
Hmm.
He did some stuff that's not okay, not intentionally, I don't think, in a tone-deaf way, which gave us all realization that maybe he should not be in that position of power and influence for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is optics, for lack of a better term. What we're trying to do right now, knowing he behaved that way, it doesn't. There should be consequences of that action. It doesn't mean, though, fuck Al Franken forever and always.
Right.
Single things do not have to define everybody. Now, Harvey Weinstein can die in a fire. just because the sheer amount of things. And even if we take out this, he's a fucking Hollywood producer. The sheer amount of terrible things he's done that had nothing to do with assaulting and harassing women is off the charts already. I could pick out probably five movies that alone for producing them he deserves to die. But, I mean, there are points where it's like, yeah, no, he can fall into a hole and never come back, and that's fine. But that's a very extreme case. There's a lot of other people that have done a lot of dumb things that I'm like, that's not okay. There need to be consequences. It does not mean you don't get to live anymore, or you don't get to exist, or you don't get to be an artist. Now, we all get to decide if we're ready to accept your art again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And some of us may never, and some of us may, and whatever. When I was arguing with people about fucking Louis C.K., like, I absolutely think he should have lost his job, which, you know, in the entertainment industry is more complicated. He lost several jobs, but I'm fine with that.
Mm-hmm.
At no point am I telling anyone, stop listening to Louis C.K.'s comedy.
Or watching his show.
Yeah. I have stopped.
Mm-hmm.
Because it feels bad. It makes me uncomfortable.
Mm.
I can't laugh now knowing what he did.
Right, right.
Whether or not you watch him is up to your personal conscience and your personal principles.
Right, right.
And neither answer is wrong. I want there to be consequences for his actions. There are being consequences for his actions. I am not saying we all have to boycott him now.
Right, right.
You have to decide that on your own.
Right, right.
I do, and it's not, I didn't choose him. Honestly, he is a brilliant comedian. I'm kind of sad that I have lost him. Bill Cosby was a huge one for me.
Mm.
And I straight up can't. Mm. I can't enjoy his stuff anymore.
Yeah.
To the degree that stuff that I used to find hilarious is like tainted now. Like it doesn't sound funny to me anymore.
Yeah.
And I really wish that wasn't true, because it was great stuff and it meant a lot to me and it was very important to me in my formative years. But it's there. If you don't have that problem, enjoy. He still absolutely needs to suffer consequences for all of the rapes. Because he did all of the rapes, people, for many decades. But yeah, I mean, you can, I don't know, the people have been tossing around a lot that the intelligent person can hold two conflicting ideas in their head. And it's become a little bit of sort of a smug buzzword kind of thing. But the concept is, like, you don't have to say this is the only right answer.
Yeah.
And we do that a lot. And there's almost never an only right answer. Very seldom.
Very seldom.
So, get your shit together, world. And go see Black Panther. Maybe that's what... Go see it four more times.
What, me?
Yeah. Mm. And then see what you have to say. Because that's what it took for Wonder Woman. Five times. I don't know what it is. I never want to see movies again in the theater. And I had a pretty strong urge to see Black Panther again. Not enough to actually do it, but it was there. I was a little surprised by that.
I mean, we probably, not in the theater, but we probably will see
it.
It
was just good. It was just a good movie. Yeah, that's about it. Because I went on some rants here, but what are we going to call this? We have such a great title for the last one.
Yes, we did.
What are
we calling
this one?
We had a great title.
We really did.
I do not know.
This stuff, what weird shit did... We probably can't call it Fuck Off Craig for the Mass Effect thing. Craig is massively overrated. What do we call this one? Okay, people, work with us here. We're not leaving until we have a title. So,
I do not know. I do not know.
All right, well, I'll find you a sleeping bag. It's gonna be a rough night.
Rough night.
Rough night. You know, today. Maybe not today. Maybe it was yesterday. I don't know. Recently, on the internet, there was a banner ad that said, "You think you know Seinfeld? Take this test."
Okay.
And for a second, I was going to take the test.
Mm.
And then I didn't take the test.
Mm.
Because here's the thing. I think I know Seinfeld pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really kind of not proud of that. But I still believe it. And I'm kind of, like, I hold to that. So, like, I'm like, I take this test, I do well. I feel bad about that. I take this test and I do poorly, and I feel bad about that in a different way.
Yes.
So I'm just like, because I'm like, oh, I thought I did know it, but I guess not. Or, yep, see, I do know it. Huh, that's sad. So yeah, so I didn't touch that.
So the moral is don't take the test.
No, this is, again, the conflicting ideas thing. Like, no, mostly it was just a random-ass anecdote while I try and think of a movie, episode title, but
okay.
Didn't. Maybe they'll call that random-ass anecdote.
I'm no help, I'm afraid. As usual.
I was going to say, we've done it 366 times. I don't know why this is news. All right, we should wrap this up now. You know, go to the blog. Tell us how Craig is wrong. And wish him a happy wedding that hasn't happened yet. Also, tell us why you won't talk about Black Panther. And
I guess this show's technically our 7th anniversary show. Or, yeah, technically.
Yeah, because it'll be a couple days before the 17th.
Yep.
So what, 8 years?
No, seven years.
Complete. That's what you meant when you said 7th anniversary. Yeah, I see. Okay.
It's interesting.
It was, linguistically, it was vague, yeah, okay. Is what I'm saying.
As so, usual.
But as usual. We've clarified, 7th anniversary of 7 years.
Yeah, 7th anniversary.
So,
happy anniversary, everybody.
Oh, went to roller derby recently.
Mm.
A lot of people I don't know, they've switched out a lot of people. You know, they go to grad school or they finish grad school or whatever, so we got anyone. Best thing ever. One skater. Derby name. Oxford Coma.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.